Empire of the Suns.
Suns.
Empire of the Suns.
Wet like on book. Wet like on book. Wet like on book.
Arizona Sports presents the Empire of the Suns podcast.
Empire of the Suns.
Hello there and welcome to the Empire of the Suns podcast. My name is Kellen Olson, joined as always by Kevin Zimmerman. Kevin, it appears Phoenix Suns basketball is indeed back.
Wow. I should do a Wolfley wow. That was my wow.
Wow. Wow. My Wolfley is the worst of us three. Matt has the best Wolfley of us at the desk.
Sinonian.
I'm glad my brain still thinks in that way, by the way. Like, we used to be in the office together. I'm glad I haven't completely detracted from our past reality. So it looks like the 22-team format is a go. We were kind of waiting for the reports to get here. It sure sounded like that's where Woj wanted to go at the start of the week, but we weren't getting anything completely a guarantee, and we still have yet to get a guarantee. The vote with the NBA Board of Governors is on Thursday, so it might be confirmed by the time you're hearing this. But for now, what we do know is that they're pushing for a 22-team format. It is going to include six teams in the West. I believe it's six. Is it five or six, Kevin? It's six, right?
It's the math. It's going to be five. Yes, five plus Wizards is six from 16.
So it's five West teams. Okay, so it's five Western Conference teams. It's going to be Memphis, Portland, San Antonio, Sacramento, New Orleans, and of course your Phoenix Suns. The big question going into this entire discussion was what is the most fair way to do this? And I think something that we didn't really hit on in the past couple of weeks and months was, how far is Adam Silver going to go on the spectrum of like fair to fun? Because the most fun thing would be, I think, all 30 teams and you do a play-in with every team. I think that would be the most fun. At least in my opinion, that would be the most fun. Some people might disagree, but at least some sort of play-in tournament where there's quite a few teams involved, at least a half dozen or so, would seem the most would generate the most amount of interest, I think. But it seems like Silver is leaning far more in the direction of being fair to the prior results of the regular season. If all reports are true, it is only going to be the eighth and the ninth seed in the West that are in a play-in. And for that ninth seed to even get the right to a play-in, they have to be within four games of the Grizzlies. A couple of teams already are. The Suns are not. They are six games back. And then in that event of a play-in, it is only going to be the eighth and the ninth seed. And the ninth seed would have to beat the eighth seed twice in order to get in. I don't know if I'm being biased, Kevin, but this kind of sucks. We were talking about all these super fun outcomes, and this just seems rather bland and boring.
Yeah, I mean, from a fan perspective, I think you are disappointed by it. But then when I look at it from the NBA standpoint, and whether you're talking about like teams like the Warriors versus the Lakers, I don't know if there's much of a better way. Now, I think a play-in tournament could have been a lot more fun. Like, we don't even know if it'll happen, and it might be one game. I think that if you had maybe go back and include the Suns and the Wizards and every team playing for that eighth seed somehow in a better way, that's not just a regular season and then maybe you don't make it, this would be more entertaining. But from a standpoint of what's fair, what's reasonable to ask of a team that's going to put in the effort to return. And then when you consider what you're playing for, nothing versus playoff spots, that's basically the range. I think that he's probably done a really good job as far as getting it as close to right as possible for as many teams as possible.
Yeah. I think one of the bigger questions here was how, in the event of like these teams playing for like positioning or whatever, how are those eight games going to be fair? By the way, have they said if these eight games are going to impact the seeding for, they're going to like count on the rest of the seeding, right?
I know Woj's story had something about it as far as lottery, but And for like even the team
for like the playoffs, because the Rockets are only 4 games out from the Clippers. The Rockets are the 6th seed. The Clippers are the 2nd seed. So there's definitely some movement that can go on. Because for me, that's got to be the case. Because the most interesting thing is here, these are essentially tune-up games for the playoff teams. Now, if they really care about their playoff seeding, they care about their playoff seeding. But they've all clinched playoff spots, and under the they're going to be under the mindset of these are tune-up games, these are preseason games. Now, of course, teams with championship aspirations, all these teams are included in that, are going to take them as seriously as possible. But there's a difference between knowing this is a tune-up game and knowing that like your season is on the line. So maybe the Suns get a break if Vincent Goodwill's report from Yahoo Sports is indeed true, that just the next 8 games on the team's schedule are what's going to be there. And luckily for the Suns, they don't have to look anywhere else and look down the line at the 9th, 10th, or 11th games for teams that aren't going to be there, because all their teams are going to be there. 7 out of 8 of their games are against playoff teams. But maybe unlucky for them is that none of those games are against the Kings, Spurs, Pelicans, Blazers, or Grizzlies, so they don't get to really impact their fate. The basic math here is that if any of these teams go 5-3, because the Suns are already... So they're 2 games back from the Spurs, and they are 2.5 back from the 3 other teams, which is the Blazers, Pelicans, and Kings. The basic math here is if any of those teams go 5-3, the Suns would have to go 8-0 in order to reach them. Now, I guess if one team went 5-3 and all the other teams went 0-8, I guess they wouldn't have to go 8-0. But realistically, they're going to have to win at least 6 of these 8 games, probably 7. And to for sure make it, I think it would have to be all 8. So it obviously puts them in a tough spot and kind of makes you wonder. And Bigley Murata asked me about this before we started podcasting. Like, what if the Suns just go 0-3? Like, do they tank? Do they just sit everyone to be safe?
And then how does that impact the teams that are going to be pissed when teams are just rolling over the zombie Suns? Like,
exactly. Yeah, we're looking for tune-up games. And that's a really good point, because a team like Utah, for example, could be looking for these serious tune-up games, and they're playing against the Suns, who are starting a Jalen Lecque, Ty Jerome backcourt. Like, they're going to be like, what the heck? Like, we're trying to get ready to play the Mavericks or the Nuggets, and you guys are throwing us this. So there's a lot of interesting wrinkles, and I think overall the thing that I have taken away from the past couple of months and talking about potential returns for hockey and baseball and basketball is that none of these were going to be perfect or even close to perfect. Every single plan was going to have a lot of flaws in it, and this one has a lot of flaws. But for me, I just think it's unfortunate that I am someone who upholds the I really like the historical aspects of sports, and I just like the record breaking and all that kind of stuff. Like, when people talk about shorting the season, I think about like the points per game, rebounds per game, like all those types of records and stuff, and like how those are affected by shortening the season or whatever. So I'm one of those people usually, but with that being said, this is not, I don't want to be as crass as in saying like, this is a year you can kind of scrap it and say F it and have some fun. But at the same time, I think it would have been cool to at least see like a double elimination, 5-team, 4-team, whatever it wound up being. Like, if it was like even something where like these 5 teams would have played each other in like a round robin type of format, and then just the final 2 wound up with the final 2, I think that would have been a whole lot better than what we're going to get. And unfortunately, for entertainment value, the league went in the direction of being fair to the Grizzlies for finishing 1 game under 500.
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing with me is, like, from the Suns' perspective, they get what they wanted, right? They get another 8 games to see how well they play healthy. And you know what? It's going to be rusty, but so are other teams. At the end of this season, every, like, basketball reference, ESPN should have, like, an asterisk that's, like, bigger than what the actual year was next to it. And I think... from both the logical perspective and financially, like, look, we're still getting the same playoff format. Do we really think it matters whether the Lakers play the Grizzlies or the Blazers? From entertainment perspective, yeah, I'd rather see the Blazers. From I feel bad for the Grizzlies perspective, like, that was a great story this year, and they might get screwed in this situation. But, I mean, I think that at the end, people just want to say, okay, this champion is like legit, even if this season was just super weird. And I think at the end of the day, you can say that, and that's the most important thing.
I guess we should briefly talk about what we think the Suns' chances are. This is obviously something we're going to get a whole lot into. I think the instantaneous kind of ways of our nature with like social media and all that kind of stuff in our generation, like I want it now. We're still 2 months away, basically, from these games. They're still pretty far away, so we're going to have a lot of time to talk about how we think this is going to unfold. But my early impressions, Kevin, and because I'm a psychopath, I was looking into these teams this morning, and I kind of forgot that, oh yeah, Portland was a team me and you really didn't like on the podcast throughout the year because they didn't have Jusuf Nurkić. They lost Zach Collins super early, and their replacement ideas for these guys were Hassan Whiteside, Mario Hezonja, Nasir Little, Carmelo Anthony, and so on. And now they're going to get both of those guys back. I believe Damian Lillard said less than a week ago that he said he's 100% certain that those two guys will play for them if they come back. Memphis had a really strange trade deadline where they took out Jay Crowder, Solomon Hill, and Andre Iguodala, and they brought back Gorgui Dieng and Justice Winslow, but Justice Winslow wasn't even healthy yet and still hasn't played yet for Memphis. And it was just a big like future, looking ahead to the future move when they were in the middle of competing for a playoff spot, but now they're actually going to get Winslow back healthy. And for me, at least, the biggest one is that as someone who just intently watched Zion at Duke the whole time, in my opinion, he was maybe 70 to 75% in the last couple weeks of the season before it got suspended when he's back. And I assume he's going to come back even healthier than that. And New Orleans was incredible when he was in. They were outscoring teams by nearly 10 points per 100 possessions when he played. Which would be among some of the best marks in the league right now. And then their starting five had a net rating of 26.3 when he was in for 230 minutes, which is pretty good, Kevin.
That's a positive plus.
That is good. even better than the ridiculous 21 point whatever the Suns have with Bridges in the starting lineup. So to me, that's my first impression is that, yes, obviously the Suns are going to get Oubre and Kaminsky back, and it helps them a bit too. But these teams in front of them that they really couldn't even beat out with those injuries in mind, and like the Grizzlies going the whole year without playing Andre Iguodala, who could have actually helped them. And of course, New Orleans going all that time without Zion, they just didn't make up enough ground in like this specific scenario, I think. Like for them to have a chance, I think they would have to be in like Memphis's spot or like right near Memphis.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's going to be so weird just because – like we talk about, it feels like last week was a month ago, and like momentum and like chemistry is the thing, right? Like you got on a heater, the Pelicans started to figure out like, oh, we're really good with Zion. But like, I don't think you just snap back into that, right? I don't think the Suns can snap back into saying, okay, if we have Kelly Oubre, Frank Kaminsky healthy with the guys who we already had, like it's just going to snap into place immediately and they're going to be playing their best basketball just because they have health and fresh legs. Like I just am curious how the 8 games will go, whether teams got better or not with their rosters because of the health thing. Like, I just don't know. So that's going to be super fascinating to kind of see like how fast teams click. And also the big concerns upcoming beyond coronavirus is like how well or how in shape and healthy are they to be taking on this workload?
Yeah. When I was talking to Bickley and Murata earlier, my prediction was that this is just going to be a super unpredictable playoffs. And I think that we are going to get something to the effect of like the Houston Rockets winning the championship. I think there's a really decent chance that happens. Now, they're still going to go with like best of five or best of seven, obviously, for the series, I would assume. But with that in mind, I think that they are adapting to such a completely different setting. And this goes for everything. They're going to be living in this bubble. They're going to be practicing in this bubble. and they're going to be playing in this bubble. I am going to take a shot every time I see a quote that says it's basketball at the end of the day, like fans or no fans, we're playing basketball. It's going to be really different, Kevin, for them playing without fans, and even especially in these super high intense games. Now, I do believe that they're going to bring the same intensity level, but do I believe there's going to be some adjustment period for it? Absolutely. And do I think that there are going to be teams that, in my mind, for example, like there is not a lot of difference between the Heat and the Pacers and the Sixers. I think that those three teams are like fairly even this year. I think it's hard to say who is like the fourth best team in the East right now. I think I would lean Indiana or Philly, but even then, like it would be pretty close. But with that in mind, I think it's undeniable that one of those or two of those three teams are going to be a whole lot better. There's going to be one team, one out of three or four every teams that we see here, that is going to have trouble with this and is not going to click right away and is not going to have enough time to accumulate. And then there are going to be other teams that benefit greatly from being able to adjust right away and make it. Doesn't that sound like the Spurs, by the way? Like the Spurs.
Yeah. you were leading me down, like, thinking about it. I think that the good teams and good coaches will separate themselves even more, because you have nothing else to do. You're together, even if you're sitting in a room more with nothing to do. And the focus is just basketball. And I think, like, maybe that will lead to overthinking and tinkering, but it's also going to be like, oh my gosh, like, Doc Rivers is really good at, like, adjusting game by game, like things like that. Or just from the team standpoint, I think guys are just going to adjust quicker in some ways. Like, it's going to be like a training camp. I think being bored probably doesn't hurt the basketball product, but I could be wrong. I don't know. It's kind of like a weird science experiment to see these guys. Like, if you just shoved me and you in our staff in a room and was like, hey, you can't see your family, you're only here to work at Disney World, I don't know how I would react. I would probably be productive, but would I be mentally there? I would probably be like overwhelmed.
Yeah, and I can't help but like discuss the timing of this too, is that this is very looking ahead, but for now it seems like we're going to see an increase in cases again, just based on the amount of people that were around for protests this week and just the numbers that have come in. Even I think in Arizona we've had over 2,000 cases come in, positive cases come in the last 2 days. Obviously there's been more testing, and it's tough to really like boil down those numbers and figure out where they're trending, but the bottom line is we have like more people getting sick lately. I believe Florida had their highest count in 6 weeks or something. So the timing of this is interesting in terms of when they're going to call those players over. I would like to think it's going to be within 2 weeks or so. Now, of course, they're going to go there and be quarantined like right away. So like even if they get there and players test positive, they're going to be like taken away from everyone, obviously, and like be in their own little spot. So like by the time the game starts, The good thing is with the time the league is going to take to get from like training camp and getting settled into actual game starting, that should theoretically be enough time to, even if you have players who are testing positive or who are quote unquote like bringing coronavirus with them, to put it in a rather blunt way, they're going to do so in a way where they can quarantine those players right away and then bring them back in time. But of course, like that's the great unknown variable of this. Woj's story says like if a player tests positive, they're just going to keep going. Like, and if they see fit. Now, of course, if like that player was in a scenario where they got other players sick, then who knows? But of course, like the great unknown is like, what if Giannis tests positive? What if LeBron tests positive? Like, are we really not going to stop the season if it's one of those guys? That's like the big unknown to this, and that could be the big variable that changes things here, obviously.
Side note, like, bless guys for like going out and protesting now, but that just scares you about like guys getting sick too. Like, I saw all the Warriors are out there and they're not going to be part of this, but like there are people going out more now with the protests, and if players are involved in that, then that's another risk, and that's more people who could be sick. So this is just you know, there's a lot of questions. I think Henry Abbott for True Hoop, he wrote this long, like 20 questions of like, why are we even deciding that it's safe now?
Yeah.
And the NBA hasn't even, they won't even say like, okay, what changed from like a month ago to make us say, okay, July 31, let's go.
Yeah, we haven't necessarily had tremendous progress, right? Like we don't have a definitive things are getting better like conclusion, right?
No.
Yeah.
The only thing we know is like
they're getting better in some aspects. Like the certain numbers you look at are trending and some numbers are trending in a good direction for sure. I don't want to like just completely downplay that. But at the same time, it's not like we have a 70% decrease in the amount of people who are testing positive or whatever by the time the season starts. Like the amount of momentum that we thought, at least in my opinion, when we were talking about like, oh, like, yeah, like the end of July, like that's really far away. But by that time, like cases will be way down and all that kind of stuff. We just haven't had that kind of momentum yet. And with the likelihood that we are going to see like not necessarily a spike, but at least like not a decrease with the amount of people that were going out in the past couple of days, rightfully so for them. It's concerning for sure.
Yeah. I mean, that's why I brought it up. It's zero people in the NBA since Rudy Gobert and all those guys in the first few days could have it right now, but that doesn't mean anything. It means nothing. If one guy goes out and gets it, then that's challenging whatever protocols that they might announce tomorrow and kind of come up with the next few months.
Who is your pick right now to get the 8 seed, just looking at it?
Oh, man. I like the Blazers.
I think it's the Blazers. I think the Blazers and the Pelicans are, like, in my opinion, arguably, like, on the level of Oklahoma City and like, in that 40-win territory that teams like OKC and Dallas are in right now. I think those two teams... Portland and New Orleans, like, fully healthy are in that range.
I think I just dug back into my, like, skull of, like, before this season when I, for some reason, thought the Blazers would be good, and then they had an awful start, and then now I'm like, oh, yeah, Nurkic, that guy has great fashion, so they probably will make it. He's coming back.
Yeah, I looked up a lot of things this morning when I couldn't sleep because insomnia is very real for the kid at this moment. Nurkic had a 10.5 net rating last year. That was one of the top 15 best marks in the league, and it was right alongside like Milwaukee's starting lineup, which just killed guys last year. And I think Danny Green was really like the only role player that was in there. But even then, it was like Danny Green, Siakam, and Lowry were all in like the top 10. You know what I mean? Like so the best teams in the league were up there, but like the outlier certainly was Nurkic up there. So that's how important he was to them last year. Like they were just such a different team when he was on the court. And unsurprisingly, like they struggled without him, even if they have Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum and all these capable players. But what I found the most was that the Zion effect for New Orleans was crazy. January 25th was the date I found where that was before the third game Zion played, because if you'll remember those two games, he was on an extremely strict like minutes regimen. He could barely touch 20. And then it kind of got to the point where he was playing like 25 to 30 a night after that. They were 11-6 in those games. Over the course of the league, they were, I believe, fifth in net rating and seventh in defensive rating, which was really surprising to me looking at it, because New Orleans was a train wreck defensively for most of the year. And for them in those like last 6 weeks, those last 18 games, to be a top 10 team in the league in defense is big. But the number one thing that I took away from it was that Drew Holiday's net rating before that date, so before January 25th, was negative 4.4. And then I believe after the break, it was after that. So like those 6 weeks, those 18 games, his net rating was, I believe, 11.1 or 12.4. It's one of those two numbers I've stuck in my head. So there was just such a monumental difference for Holiday, who in my opinion is their most important player besides Zion. There was such a monumental shift for him once Zion came back, and it seemed like he was just a different player with Zion in the mix. And I just think that they're the pick as long as Zion is healthy and good to go and everything, and they're all full steam ahead, whatever I'm trying to say there. I think that they're easily the pick, and they should be the favorites in my opinion. Because, by the way, Zion is averaging 24 points a game right now. I think we just kind of like
tripped into that. Yeah.
The hype. Yeah, exactly. The hype of him, and like, he's everywhere. You see him on SportsCenter every time. It's like, oh yeah, by the way, like, this is one of the most productive rookies of all time. And is like probably one of the best rookies we've ever seen. Like, he's really special. And I haven't even mentioned Brandon Ingram yet, who was an all-star. They have a really, really good six. They have the five starting, which is those three guys, Lonzo, who was good this year. Derek Favors was great for them this year. And then J.J. Redick is six. Now they need like a seventh, eighth, ninth guy. Our boy, Nikhil Alexander-Walker, not quite ready yet.
Not ready
for those minutes, but they've got Josh Hart. They've got Etuan Moore. The numbers weren't so good with them in that 6 week sample. So that made me a little hesitant. But with that being said, I think they're my early pick. But I do think you look at this, Kevin, and you look at this group, and you just like go down to the question of like who has the best player. And in my opinion, Devin Booker is the second best player in this group. Maybe third, depending on how you're feeling about Zion. I think Dame has enough of a track record to take number one there, but that's at least, in my opinion, like a reason to be confident about the Suns, is if this just comes down to a game-to-game thing, who's going to win games? And if Devin just takes over for 2 weeks, they could make it, because he's one of the best players in this format, if not like one of the two or three.
It's crazy to think, too, like even just a rookie like you mentioned, Nikhil Alexander-Walker, like what if he just uses the last few months that they've been off and like suddenly it was like everything slows down, he gets it. And when you talk about a guy like Booker, like, okay, he's healthy, he's fresh. We're not dealing with those little dings. Like, this is going to be, we're going to find out a lot of things at the same time. Like, someone might come back out of shape.
Right. Yeah. We haven't even talked about that yet. Yeah. I don't know. It's going to be fascinating. Like, the Kings have been so like, hilariously like standard below average, like they just refuse to look anything but below mediocre for this whole run. But maybe this is what they needed, you know, because like in terms of like a team and like a 7-8 man group, and De'Aaron hasn't really been as good as he was last year, but Holmes has been awesome for them this year. And obviously like the Spurs, they have LaMarcus Aldridge and DeMar DeRozan. They are the San Antonio Spurs. DeJounte's played really well has been really good for them. And obviously they've got a lot of pieces there. I think realistically you could see any team make it. So I guess that in part is exciting, but I just really want to avoid like the 1-3 start here, Kevin. And then we're watching, but like I said, like Tariq Owens minutes, you know, I'm not looking forward to that.
Yeah.
That's going to be the strangest adjustment for this, likely from a Suns perspective, is going to be going from a game where you're absolutely like, the thing is like when we're looking at game like 73 or 77 of the season, we're not treating it like the Suns are win or go home for the playoffs when they are not mathematically eliminated from the playoffs yet. But these games are just going to mean a whole lot more. And to go from this game that just means the world to a game that doesn't really mean anything, kind of sucks. But I think Scott Howard is the one who's been bringing this point home on Twitter a bunch the past couple of months. It's going to be pretty cool to see the Suns playing meaningful games, though. Like, these are extremely meaningful, the most meaningful games they've played in since they were in the playoffs, I would argue, right?
Yeah.
To get in the playoffs, I mean, I guess an 82-game season is too, but...
I mean, they're basically, like, if you want to think about it this way, it's NCAA tournament. They make it. They're a 10 seed maybe, and they've got to run off six straight to be in the conversation. Yeah, that's fun if you want to think about it that way for them. And every other team I think really is in that same situation, who's at risk of not being included in that 16.
It's also fun that we don't have to start talking about the draft right now. We can wait a couple months, but God,
did you see, I think lottery was August.
Oh my God. It's going to be a mess. We're going to have to do the draft and free agency in the span of 3 weeks during the NFL season. Do they have like secondary brains for us at Bonneville? Like, can we borrow? Do they have like brains in a lab somewhere that we can just use to like fry for that month instead of our own? Because, oh my God, like that is going to be so much fun as a sports fan. Don't get me wrong. And like this whole run of stuff is going to be like amazing. Like I think like games with no fans is going to suck for sure. But yeah, isn't that what it is? Like the off season is just basically going to go in October. Like the finals are going to end and then the draft is going to be like the week after.
Yeah. Draft, free agency the next week. And then we haven't even talked about starting next season, but I think it's interesting and it might be okay to only take a month or two off because
yeah. Like, oh yeah.
They got rest now. The whole point is that builds up when you don't take a break. So as long as they're staying in shape.
Yeah. I'm really excited personally. I'm just super excited about like just having like the playoffs back. Hopefully we get there, you know, hopefully we do. But we'll talk about it in the coming weeks here and kind of get more in depth, kind of like break down these teams bit by bit, kind of tease it there at the beginning. They're in the middle there that I'm writing some stuff up on this. We're going to have a lot of coverage coming up on just how exactly they fit into this picture of six different teams and where they go from there. So we'll have a lot more coming for you guys then. See ya.